And welcome to the technical
briefing.
The delegates from the department, I guess you all have the program before you. There are little changes that we'd like to make on the program. After item number 3, discussion, we can have 4 as adoption of a committee program, which will be done by honorable members, and then 4 will be 5, and 5 closing the mark will be 6. Honorable Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, the minute. What we agree about the minute, we need to
We always, there are set of minutes that we did not adopt. What I was thinking is, because I think there is a technical problem here, because ideally the committee must meet an hour or half an hour before we call the department and then to adopt our minutes. I think we will action that in our next meeting, and then it should be the next time maybe you should listen 30 minutes for the committee to consider and adopt the minutes. Then that is the agenda for now, and the next item will be the Defense Secretary's presentation of the third quarter expenditure and performance report for financial year 2012-2013.
Yeah.
Can we have the
thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans. First, I would like to introduce the delegation that will be presenting the report. I'm aware of the schedule, so in our presentation, maybe we'll try to be as brief and concise as possible so that we can have more time for discussion and allow the committee to continue the agenda that we've been up to. My name is Sam Gulure. I'm the Secretary for Defense.
Welcome everybody. My name is Paul Defensor. I'm acting Departmental Performance Monitoring Relations. Thank you.
Major General Roman Swana, Chief Military Policy Strategy and Plan. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Regile Kamede, the Chief of Defense Policy Strategy and Plan.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tikiwa Sakela, the Chief Financial
Good morning, I'm Colonel Harris Van Eper. I'm the staff officer responsible for the putting of performance monitoring and evaluation within the HNDF.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Brigadier General Chichi Bondu, Director of Planning in the HNDF. Thank you.
Good morning, sir. My name is Barney Engelbrecht. I'm the Chief Director of Budget Management in the Department of Defense.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Brigadier General Tasha Dacus, Director of Operations Support at Joint Operations.
The Defense Secretary, is that off?
That. please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Brigadier General Eddie Gross. I'm the Director on the Strategy and in on the Strategy.
You must speak into the mic then.
Good morning, Chair and Members. I'm Colonel Philip I. Feldman. I'm the Senior Staff Officer on the Plan and Airport Headquarters.
Good morning. I'm Colonel Paul Carroll, SSO Business Plan and Finance Minister.
Honourable Chair Members, we are Bill Pillay, Director of Maritime Planning at Navy Headquarters.
Thank you very much. Can we have the presentation for the Defence Secretariat?
Yes, thank you very much. Chairperson, Honourable Members, as you can see, we've brought in a full mic of to make sure that we're all well defended. The scope of our presentation will be according to the legislative requirements, and we will provide a summary of our quarterly financial performance, and then after that we will provide a summary of our quarterly performance, quarterly financial performance, and then quarterly on our performance targets that we have. Just to recall again that this presentation is done according to the legislative requirements, that the accounting officer must ensure that the department has and maintains effective, efficient, and transparent systems of financial risk management, internal control, as well as the official audit panel action of an audit committee. And that the federal regulations requires us as an institution to establish procedures for quarterly reporting, and the report that we are providing to the members of the committee this evening is the first quarter report for the financial year 2012-2013, meaning it covers the period from September to December 2012. And the framework, we also required to present the framework for strategic plan and annual performance plan. And we have since submitted our annual performance plan for the financial year 2013-2014, which I think will give the members of the committee time to go through it, and also an opportunity maybe for the department to present next quarter or the next session when we are called to do so. I will then just highlight on the slide for the financial performance. This is the financial performance for the whole department. The administration part of it, as you as members remember, recall, that program is for the secretariat, and then after that you have all the services, self-employment, others who are deployed under the joint operations, the landward defense, the army, and the air defense, South African Air Force, maritime South African Navy, military health support is that of South African military health services, and then we have defense, intelligence, and the general support. When we will provide a breakdown on all of these programs that we have. But in summary, at December, our expenditure was at 68%. We would have liked this for this financial year 68%. Last year, at the same point in time, was 71.4%. That means we have fallen behind from where we were at the same time last year. But in terms of our targets and projected performance, we would have liked at that stage at the end of December to have been at 75%. We are at 58.1%, meaning we are 6% off where we would have liked to be in terms of our target. We have, of course, as required by the regulations, interacted with the National Treasury. They have looked at that. They have question that in detail at the end of the long discussion debate with the National Treasury. We had a fair one and indication that 6% of the 6% deletion is still within the acceptable range, because the acceptable range of deviation is 10%. But the warning was that usually nothing much happens between December and March, so we should have been at a better position than that. As members know, then the next quarter will be the final quarter, which will be the end of the financial year 2012-2013, which ends in the next few weeks. Next. This is where we put down, where we provide a breakdown according to the various programs and items on our budget, which is assessed amount of 68.1%. I think where we are mostly behind is mostly on a capital asset, and that's because of the time it takes to get all our public, transparent and competitive bidding up and running in place for this capital asset. Especially when it comes, as you can see, members, I'm sure they have the slides with them. Okay. As you can see here at 15%, which is maybe where you notice the lowest, and it's right at the specialized military assets. Because of the time it takes to get the military assets acquisition process up and running, because most of the time we have to go through development program on this military assets. But also, we are looking at the invoices that are still coming in here, where we are at 18% again, where we are recording our lowest expenditure. Because of the invoices that we have to get from CETA, all our IT system have to go through CETA, and most of the time then we would rely on those invoices to be processed if for CETA. Usually the tendency for the past quarter that after the reporting, we have seen that number of invoices coming in, so we should be able to cover with that. With that regard, this will be, I think we can then discuss in detail, the members have a slide in front as part of the presentation where we can go on detail, but as we have indicated in terms of our expenditure, we are 6% of the projected expenditure, which we mean that we need to revisit, make sure that the invoices are coming in, make sure that the programs are implementing on their targets. And when I start presenting maybe on the performance, which is the next area of presentation, it will be clear then that where we are not meeting the target will be an indication of where the under expenditure is happening, because if you don't spend, you run a risk of not meeting the target for that performance. We will then go to a presentation on our performance. We will be highlighting the red, meaning that we have set ourselves a target, and in the third quarter we would have liked to have met at this level towards reaching that target. And we are putting red here because we are at high risk of not meeting the target. And then the committee will be monitoring us and maybe guiding us to ensure that there are major action interventions taking place to ensure that we meet the target. Where we are amber, then we will be at a moderate risk, and requiring a corrective action, probably as the management being in position to be acting on it. And where we are green, actually we have met the target. In my presentation, I propose, Honorable Deputy, that I don't go into detail with where we have met the target, but of course it will be visible for the members to interrogate it first, and that I talk more into detail where we are red and where we are amber to facilitate that discussion. I'll start with the Defense Secretariat. Here, the programs that are in under administration and the sub-programs under administration are the Departmental Direction, the Government Information Technology, the Policy and Planning, the Financial Services, the Acquisition Services, Test Material, and the Defense Supply Chain Integration, as well as the Defense International Affairs. When we start here, I can see that on your presentation, green will be green, but on the screen, green is not green. I think it looks amber. So, but we have written in full ways that this is green. So when it comes to compliance with the ICT portfolio and defense enterprises, and when it comes to the marketed Department of Defense Information Strategies and all the information communication systems, we are meeting our target. Next slide. When it comes to the Department of Defense engaging with other departmental government departments and the clusters, as well as when it comes to support and results for the defense review process that you know is taking place right now, we are meeting our target. When you look at serial number 6, we are talking about the policies that need to be authorized for promulgation. In other words, for this financial year, as a department, we have set ourselves a policy that needs to come into place or those that need to be revised. Here, unfortunately, we are running red, mainly because these policies are in a process of approval. They are from the Defense Secretariat with the South African National Defense Force, but most of them are waiting the completion of the defense review process. Because when it comes to the policies, we don't want to be revising the policies every year. So we would have preferred to have had a defense review in place, running, make sure our policies are informed by the defense strategy, so that we don't review now and then next year having to review them again because the Parliament has adopted a new defense review. So that's why we're giving ourselves red there. And come the fourth quarter report, which ends this in the next 2 weeks, we don't think we would have made much difference from red. At best, we might be able to process some of the where better clarity in terms of which direction we're going. We might have processed some of them so that it can take us to amber. But we might come back to the fourth quarter report that does not make much change, hopefully for better to amber. And then when it comes to tabling of our annual performance plan in Parliament, as well as with other compliance with other national prescripts on our compliance with the tabling report in Parliament, we are green in that regard, meeting our target. Next slide. As we have indicated, when it comes to the enterprise risk management and the tabling of annual reports in Parliament, we have been meeting our target. But when it comes to the department research capability status, there we are not achieving on our target. This is because I think one of the passions that most of us have in the Department of Defense is that there is a lot that we can do in terms of contributing towards the research capability, not just on the Department of Defense, but also for the country. Because when you think about it, the Department of Defense, one way or another, has a major contribution to all our state research councils. Whether you are talking about the Medical Research Council, because of our South African Military Health Services, if you are a scientist, you could say we have a captured audience for various research because of our contribution to the National Department of Health for research in health. If you are talking about CSIR, Council for Science and Industrial Research, because of our technology that we need for our military forces, for armed forces and our military equipment, we can make a major contribution towards CSIR activities. And even if we talk about the Human Science Research Council. So during this program, as our countries have been pushing the department, that push yourself to the limit, put programs up, put your research capabilities out there. The country is saying that, the international standard is that 25% of operational budget should be going towards research. Let's say that, let's put ourselves up there. But unfortunately, for this financial year that ends now in March, we had put ourselves those targets to set up an organizational structure and design and conclude an investigation in terms of how best as a Department of Defense can set up this research center, for a lack of a better word, defense research center that coordinates all research in this area that I've mentioned. Unfortunately, the people there that were scheduled to put up at the organizational design for research in the Department of Defense are the same people that were pulled out of our department into Defense Review to play the role of a secretary to the Defense Review, which has been very demanding. I think the members have been following the activities of the Defense Review Committee, and that has made us fall back on this. So this is one area then where we are at high risk of not meeting the target that we have set ourselves in terms of lifting up the bar as far as our research activities is concerned. That's right. When it comes to the adverse findings on the financial services now, we have set ourselves the target that there should be no adverse audit findings. Talking about this financial year, and I'm told by the team that as far as that is concerned, we're on target. And when it comes to approved policies regarding resource and unit costing, those policies have been in place and policies have been approved. For the defense fiscal framework status, we are not exactly where we are, because this is the area where we wanted our fiscal framework to be in line with our defense strategy. And for this financial year, our target was that we would have had a defense review approved, and then we put our fiscal framework aligned to that defense strategy. Now, because of the delays in the defense strategy, in the defense review, then our fiscal, we are giving ourselves an amber there, meaning that we can't really get to meet our target as defense review work is not yet complete. Considering number 14, we talked to the percentage of payment in accordance with the invoices and claims as well as the charges are concerned. Honorable members will know, the executive has placed strong emphasis that the service provider must be paid within 30 days of submission of invoices. This has also come out on the State of the Nation address, to a point whereby I think the Commander-in-Chief even emphasized that otherwise there will be consequences, which definitely got my attention as the accounting officer in terms of the payment of invoices within 30 days. We are giving ourselves amber there. We have not actually reached the target where we want to be, to a point, and the challenge that we're facing is that the footprint of our operations cut across the length and breadth of our country. each member can imagine an invoice received in Juba to be paid in Pretoria. Verified in Juba, and when it gets to Pretoria, it needs to be second verification in terms of checks and balances, end up making it very difficult to have all of them processed. We try, we do our best. Most of them are processed within 30 days, but we still have others that take more than 30 days to be processed. We actually had the same situation when it comes to the procurement, and the strategy we adopted was that we're going to decentralize our procurement center so that when somebody in Tuba is looking for to acquire ordinary products and services, they don't have to rely on the procurement center in Pretoria, but they can procure right there in those military bases that are spread across the country. So we have succeeded. After a while, we have reached a situation where we're comfortable now that we can decentralize the procurement process. But we are still facing challenges. Now and again, you find that the capacity in the remote areas is not to where we want to be in the procurement processes. And then we end up with unauthorized expenditure, fruitless expenditure, and the irregular expenditure, because the bases in outlying areas are not well capacitated to deliver the services in accordance with our regulations. That has given us a little bit of a slowdown to say, before we can say payment must also be decentralized into the basis, we need to make sure that we have financial management and internal controls in place, active, being implemented, before we can decentralize our payments. So when I remember those are things that the payments are still set, the procurement is decentralized, but the payments are centralized in Georgia, and that leads to a number of delays in terms of the payments within 3 days. I think even by the end of this quarter, end of the financial year, we might still remain amber. So I don't see much movement in that regard, simply because one needs to manage the risk that before we decentralize the payments, we must make sure that the internal controls are in place and the financial management capacity is developed in those areas. The next is looking into acquisition services, the defense material. We are EMA there because on the strategy for defense industry, because this we would like to have had it approved, but it's not yet approved, although it's been developed now, it's out in place, because we're still waiting also for the defense review to process to get concluded in that regard. The budget allocation that is received for renewal of main equipment in relation to the total boat is in red, as well as the percentage that DOD spends on research and development. Here, the target that we are putting is that 80% of our total target should be for equipment, for assets, for equipment. That's our target. But up to now, only about 10% of our budget expenditure is going towards equipment. And also, on our research, we'd like to spend 25% on research, but only, I mean, the research, that the secure budget, 25% is supposed to be on research, but only 14%. These are the areas where we are a little bit far from reaching our budget in terms of allocation for various reasons. One of the main reasons is that, especially in this financial year, we had requested unforeseeable expenditures for the deployment that we embarked upon. Number one, it was the operation for the safeguarding of the African Cup of Nations, whereby the Treasury indicated that they will not be giving an additional allocation for that, as well as for other additional developments we had to do, both in the Goma region, DRC, as well as in the Central African Republic, and that we must reprioritize. This time when we are asked to reprioritize on our programs, we find ourselves having to reprioritize from the equipment and research budget that were set into additional operational budget for deployment. Next slide. In terms of the acquisition services for most of the activities, in terms of our defense supply chain integration, policy development in that regard, we are on target. When it comes to the defense international affairs, we are mostly on target, except for policies regarding the foreign relations strategy and status. Here, we're in the process of briefing various bodies, that is various councils within the Department of Defense, both in the military and in the secretariat, in terms of our policies for foreign relations. This policy on foreign relations has not been approved. Initially, we were waiting for DECO to come up with the country's international relations strategy, which has now been developed, and we are now in the process of aligning our defense foreign relations to the country's foreign relations strategy. We have done the draft, and we are in the process of having consultation with the various command councils on these foreign relations. This has become very important because of increased activities in this regard. As members of the council, we know we are engaged in a number of bilateral and multilateral, maybe bilateral mostly, what we call defense committees, where we have joint exercises with countries in Latin America, North America, Europe, Africa, and Asia, and expanding requests for collaboration in the defense industrial trans-industrial cooperation, as well as in various military to military collaboration. These a number of MOUs and agreements out being properly designed, but it's very slow in terms of implementation. As a department, we are setting up a monitoring unit to monitor the implementation of these bilateral joint agreements that we have for defense-to-defense collaboration, and trying to develop a policy to ensure that this is done in a coordinated manner. We are on AMBA here, draft policies there, but I think come the fourth quarter, I've been assured by the chief of staff here that we are likely to be green. If not, we will remain AMBA, but definitely we are not going to regress to red in that regard. For the human resource support services, when it comes to the Defense Service Commission, we haven't reached our target, which is that of a fully functional and recommendation submitted to the Ministry of Defense and Military Affairs, which we have done. I mean, we have submitted it, but as members will recall, the Defense Service Commission Act has been adopted. The nominations for the members to the Defense Service Commission have been presented to Cabinet, but were sent back after to ensure that there is appropriate representativity that is aligned to the demographics of the country. So we need just to have that permanent members of the Defense Commission appointed for us to be fully functional. Hopefully, maybe even at the end of this quarter, we might still remain member there. There will not be much movement, but we still have to take it back to Cabinet once it has been filed. The rest of the human resource support services are actually running on green. And when it comes to the legal services, the litigation that that have to be settled in favor of the Department of Defense. I think this might was on the Secretariat side. It might cause a bit of a confusion. We don't have most of legal actions being taken on the Secretariat side. Most of the legal actions are taken on the South African Defense Force side. I think you see that reflecting differently when it comes to the Defense Force. And the establishment of the Office of Military Ombudsman, as you know, has now been concluded. That's why we can have a green day. And I think the Military Ombudsman will be presenting the program and report to this committee in the next coming few days. Now, we will do the overview on the South African Defense Force, which covers areas of employment, landward defense, air defense, maritime defense, military health, intelligence, and general support. We will start with the mission readiness capabilities in the area of health fitness status, as well as the trend of tribal status on concurrent health assessment, where, as members can see, well, the target is that we need to have a positive trend. This is where you compare the health status of the whole Department of Defense, medically healthy, and those that will be not medically fit. Now, the trend, we want to see a positive trend when it comes to the health and fitness status. What has happened is that this trend, it's a trend we're talking about, away from quarter to quarter. The trend, quarter to quarter, is coming negative and negative. The reason is that we have calculated that we will be bringing so many young people into the Defense Force on this current financial year, but because of the budget, we had to cut the number of young people that are coming into the Defense Force. Now, if you cut the number of people like through your MSDS program and through your new recruit program, then you sort of tilt the balance the other way. When you look at the ratio of people who are already employed, I mean, who are passing their medical exams or declared healthy and fit for deployment, that ratio has become negative and negative, meaning that overall, the reason for that is that overall, the Defense Force membership as it stands today, on year to year or on quarter to quarter, we are finding that it's becoming older and older, and the young proportion is becoming less and less, and that affects the health and the fitness status, giving us a negative trend. This is something that maybe members of the Political Committee would like to help us monitor as we go through and maybe advise whenever possible as to how fast we can reverse the trend. It is a worrying trend. By the time it explodes, probably I will no longer be a Secretary for Defense. It will be somewhere down the line. But for it to be corrected, action is needed now. Maybe one of the reports might come in is just to get the spread of our membership in the numbers and the numbers and mission readiness. Look at the ratio, constantly looking at the ratio in terms of the number of defense force and the percentage of the defense force that is ready for deployment now. When you look at the trend of the deployable data on concurrent health assessment, the concurrent health assessment, we do get negative and positive. This one changes all the time. I will not be able to predict where we're going to be by the end of this quarter. But what it means is that regularly, we do medical exams on the members of the Defense Force continuously. Every quarter, well, we wanted to do it every year, and then every half a year, or at least twice a year, once or twice a year, but ideally every quarter, you find that the people who are healthy and on medical exams, ready to be deployed, they are already deployed. These members are already on the borders, they are already deployed in living support of the people internally. They are already out and deployed in the peacekeeping mission. So at any given point in time, when you look, take a sample of the people who have done, who have passed their medical exams with flying colors, at that point in time when you are doing that dipstick assessment, you are going to find that the number can change, because we are only examining those who are maybe in the bases or in the offices who medically might not fit that kind, that medical profile that you want. So as what we are saying here, we're just talking about the targets that we have as the Department of Defense for the mission-ready capabilities of our soldiers. And we then look also in the environment of logistics in terms of the approved capital works plan projects that have been completed as scheduled. This one, I think, I've been told that it will change because there was a delay in the beginning of the year. The Department of Public Works was very slow in their refurbishment programs and in also approving the projects for us to meet with us. But come this quarter, even if there might not be much movement, this is one area where I think we should be able to move from red into amber in terms of our public work project working with the Department of Public Works. In terms of border safeguarding, the unit deployed, we are on target. In terms of regional security, that is compliance with the fourth level for external operation, compliance with the visibility of equipment for external operation, and the percentage of value of claims reimbursed by the United Nations, we are not necessarily on target. I wouldn't say we are red. Maybe we are moving from amber to maybe red to amber there. One of the challenges that we face for our equipment that is deployed in a peacekeeping operation is that most of it is not serviceable. This mostly relates to the budget in terms of servicing this. Whether it's aircraft, I think we talked about it the other day when we talked about the program of AMG, or whether it's the vehicles on the ground or the airports, the aircraft, the budget that we need and the personnel that we need, the capacity we need to make sure that this equipment is serviceable. Now, the difficulty that we also come across is the payment that comes from the United Nations. Besides the processes of verifications that need to take place before the United Nations can pay, which most of the time takes its own time, is that when the United Nations come to our deployed areas, besides looking at the forces that are out active and in operations in the peacekeeping mission, they want to verify that how many are operational in terms of the personnel, how many are operational. But they want to do the same thing also with the vehicles, with the aircraft and the vehicles as they come. Now, if they find that these vehicles are not serviceable, they're not out there operational, the equipment, and they're not out there operational, then they simply don't pay us. Or we struggle to get them to pay us. They will only pay us on the verifiable operational and traceable equipment. That causes some delays. If anything else, actually, it makes us not be eligible for the reimbursement from the United Nations. It's a constant challenge that we have. Really, all we need is that we must be, the target is that we must at least be 70% accessible and operational so that we can get the refunds that we deserve. In terms of internal and external operations on the LNGF, the force itself, employment, I think we are on target. And when you look at the strategic direction of the Department of Defense, the number of defense attachés offices established, we are on target. When it comes to the issue of the legal cases on the side of the South African Defense Force, that's where we are struggling in the South African Defense Force cases. But here we're just looking at the cases that are going to court. We would like, at least as a Department of Defense, to have 60% of cases that go to court settled in our favor. Here, I think we're on red, because only when we did assessment at that time, only 14% of the cases that have gone to court during this financial year are settled in favor of the Department of Defense. This is one area where we have started putting a lot of focus on. The issue that we're looking at two levels. Level number one maybe would be, or maybe start with level number two, would be whether are we getting the, do we have the capacity within the Department of Defense for legal support to be able to argue our cases successfully in court. That's one. Using the state attorneys as we usually do, or even private legal firms. But I think mostly is how compliant are we as a department with the various regulations, internal regulations. The most of these legal cases are in the environment of human resources. It's a very difficult and sensitive environment when we are taken to court for not having promoted me, or taken to court for a disciplinary case or a case that was handled by the military justice and others. But the fact of the matter is that on human resources issues that are taken to court, we are not meeting the target in terms of having these cases. These HR cases taken in favor of the department. I think this is a repeat. Yeah, this is a duplication. Okay. I think the same explanation, this one, I think when we use the, oh yes, I remember now, you're right. When we use the point of reporting for the National Treasury, this one is talked to the outputs and the outcomes in terms of now a medium-term strategic framework. In other words, we are now looking in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, but the definition will be the same. And also, when it comes to the commitments in terms of our outputs, in terms of the commitment to internal operations, we are on target in that regard. When it comes to also looking at, still looking in that area of HR in the medium-term strategic framework, the compliance, where we're not on target is the compliance with the training targets, reskilling. As you can see, just to explain that from time to time, we do get our soldiers trained to the necessary capabilities, and they get deployed where requirement is met. But when it comes to reskilling, we had a program that when you approach your military exit, whether you are exiting through resignation, or you are exiting through military exit mechanism, or you are exiting through retirement, our members have an option that they can voluntarily request the department to assist with the reskilling in the areas of their choice within the limited budget that has been put aside for this purpose. So we have put aside a budget for military reskilling of our members and this is voluntary, and the members have to come in and opt for it. We had hoped that we can have maybe about 70 or so of these members coming every year, but up to now it has been 0-0. I think that's what is reflected there, that voluntarily members have not come forward for this program that we have in the HR environment for reskilling of our personnel. When it comes to the trends direction on our outcomes and inputs for the approved force design and approved force structure, we are on EMBA, that is, we're on progress. Drafts are in place, discussions are taking place, but we were waiting for the defense review, because the members will remember that the defense review had a number of, had an extensive area dedicated to this issue of force design and force structure. We are on EMBA in that regard, with work in progress, and I think there's not going to be much movement between now and the third quarter and the fourth quarter in that regard. Thank you very much, Madam.
Thank you very much. It's a presentation from the Defense Secretariat. Then I will now give honorable members to interact with the presentation. I'll start with you, Honorable Minia, Honorable Issa, Honorable Daniel, Honorable Kamateli, Honorable Kateda, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. I presume that we'll have one or two rounds of questions, so I'll limit my first round of questions to possibly three questions. I mean, in my view, the Defence Force exists to maintain mission-ready capabilities. And for me, I therefore focus on the whole question of the combat readiness and the military preparedness of the Defence Force. So my first question is in respect of the South African Navy, and particularly the submarine capability. Now, I understand from the presentation that we have three submarines, the SAS Queen Majaji, which is the submarine which had the, what I think was referred to as the unplanned contact with the seabed, has a defective battery and is not operational. The SAS Charlotte Maquepe is in DED and a maintenance period. And the SAS Mantatisi is also in a maintenance period and has been for the past 7 years. I must then infer from the presentation that the South African Navy does not have one operational submarine. Is that correct? All three submarines are not in the water and for various reasons are not operational. Is that correct? The second is the frigate capability. My understanding is that we have four frigates, and according to the presentation, only the SAS Amatola, which is the frigate with damaged engines, is operational. Does that mean that we only have one frigate which is operational? We do know that there are two other frigates in the operational cycle, but both those frigates require engine replacements. In respect of those frigates, when will those engine replacements
take place? I think the areas that Honorable Menier is raising, in the context in which he is raising them, are the matters that are for the Joint Standing Committee. And in my view, Chairperson, this information that Honorable Menier is now disposing to the Portfolio Committee in regard to the report is putting the defense at risk.
Chair, with respect, what's putting the defense at risk is the fact that not one of our submarines is operational. That's what's putting the fence adrift.
No, that's fine, honorable members. I remember the in terms of the constitution, the defense force should be well equipped so that they can provide a national security. That's not the understanding. Chairperson is the understanding, but that level of deliberation is at another level. We did not ask for permission to restrict this meeting. So this meeting is an open meeting. We have everybody here, and we can't get into this sensitive matters when we have everybody here and we have not been sought into secrecy in discussing the areas that Honorable Mayor is bringing to the attention of this meeting. Honorable Mazia, is that not already in the public arena, in the public domain, the state of our frigate and our submarine? Can I get a...
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Mayor and Honorable Mazia. It is a very difficult issue in terms of to what level do we want to go. I can see an argument, strong argument, that really has to be behind closed doors when we, as a country, have to now put everything on the table in terms of the weaknesses we have, the strengths that we have, especially the area that the Honorable Mayor is covering, the area of the Navy, because we, as you know, we're involved in a number of operations, anti-piracy along the channel. We'd like to extend it to the West Coast, and the piracy threat is not getting diminished. If anything else, the assessments, indigenous assessments that are going to Western, we are having boats that are landing in the wild coast of Eastern Cape from Asia, just dropping people there without anybody knowing. These who are picking up now, we need to prepare ourselves to stop that. So I think it's when you come in public and say all our submarines are not working, all our frigates are not working, you say that in public, we don't respond, we don't comment, but the honorable members, they need the information, the detailed information, what is the status of mission readiness, and such status must be discussed, I think, in an environment where we have a security clearance around it so that we can feel free ourselves. I'm sitting here not free to put everything on the table of our strength so that the parents know how strong we are or our weakness, which the information the parents will be interested in. So I am in a dilemma here. I'll be guided by the committee.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mayor, what your other question?
Chair, just on the dilemma, I don't think any dilemma exists. The Constitution is clear that we can only close a committee meeting if it would be reasonable and justifiable to do it in a democracy. And it would seem to me that the only reason that I would agree to a closed meeting would be if there was any risk or if there was a reasonable risk that existing operations or operations in the future would be compromised, or indeed if the life of the serving member was being compromised. My question is about the operational readiness of the submarines are broad and in general. They are not detailed and they certainly don't refer to either existing or future operations. And so there can be no the public interest is in fact served by the Secretary of Defense disclosing to us the operational state of, for example, the submarine flotilla and frigate flotilla, because we as public representatives then have a public duty to take responsibility and to ask the hard questions and to put pressure on the Minister to intervene to ensure that those capabilities are properly funded and operate at the standards that they require to, precisely so that we can protect the national security of the Republic.
Are you done?
My last question, Chair, was on the South African airport. Now, the Minister disclosed yesterday that 12 Gripen fighter aircraft are, in fact, in long-term storage. I presume that the Gripens are in long-term storage precisely because of the fact that the operating budget of the South African Air Force has been stripped to the bone. My question then refers to the Hawk system. Are there any Hawk aircraft which are in long-term storage? And if there are, how many are there? Thank you.
I'm not going to call your name, Sadi.
Fine, okay. Thank you very much. Okay, I just want to raise some issues in the presentation itself. One is on the capital assets. I do appreciate the comments made by Treasury to the Department as well, but I'm not clear because the items mentioned under capital assets are huge items. I'm just looking at machinery and equipment, I'm looking at software, I'm looking at biological assets, which are 0.9, software and intangibles at 2.3%, specialized military assets at 17.3%. Now, if there are commitments made for the purchase of these capital assets, it means that we can even overspend on the budget, and not by these percentages. It depends on delivery and when it's actually invoiced. If we can have an idea from the department exactly what the invoices are for the end of this financial year, which will clearly reflect the 68.1% is irrelevant. It depends on the commitment, financial commitments that must be met within that financial year and when it must be delivered. So if that could be clarified, it makes nonsense of the Treasury's remark of it being less by 6%, by 10% even. The other one I would like to raise is also the under-expenditure on strategic direction. Essentially, the Defence Secretariat is responsible for strategic direction and very much policy-making. And I'm a bit concerned if I hear that 10 policies are not done yet and there's still other policies that must be reviewed or developed. And that we have so much litigation which affects HR. And essentially, this policy environment, if it's absent, it opens any institution to litigation and to lose its cases, because there are not proper procedures and processes in place. I'd like to have a clear understanding of what are these 10 policies and why do we have an underspending on strategic direction when it's the most important task of the Defence Secretariat. The third question I want to raise is on the over-expenditure. I think that's an assumption that we can make, that if you already spend 95.8% on acquisition, there is the potential that you may overspend in acquisition if you're already gone to the third term only. Can we have a commitment from the department that it will not actually overspend in that particular area? And of course, an indication is given to me of a third question, the unbudgeted expenditure of 25 million. Now, that is a problem when I read we have the enterprise risk management maturity level 4. Now, level 4 is a very high level in terms of auditing, and I find that this item has slipped through the lack of the administration and the controls that are in place at level 4. Then it raises the question of the competency of our auditing or internal controls within the system. If I can have clarity why that expenditure slipped through without the notice or prior notice of the authority or the CFO or the accounting officer. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you to the Secretary of Defense for the record of staff and also reporting on time. So my first question will be, well, not question that the Honourable Member asked, what are these unbudgeted expenditures for? Maybe let's get a sense of what are these. We have been told that about reprioritization. I don't want to assume that some of that money was spent on those. The second one, Chair. Maybe let's have a sense, Chair. Where is this research capability, research capability located. And did you put in place realistic targets on that? Because you see, when you read the documents and the annual report, you find that they're supposed to target. I would assume also when the department comes with an HEC, they envisage to have these targets. But since it's not democracy, we have been told that we're on peak time. And we know that the budget of the Department of Defense has spiraled down. So as the department also envisages and putting down its CPC needs to realize this fact that it really deals with us. And it's going to take time for the budget of the defense. Until what the honorable member was talking about, that I do not want to repeat. Maybe the honorable member should remember that he was the member who have said he will not support the budget of the Department of Defense to act. But I'm not going to get to that debate because I think that's a debate that we need to get into in a close meeting. We need to put everything on the table, and as a country, and as honorable members of the committee, begin to ask ourselves and the country, do we need the Department of Defense? Because if we're not putting the money for the Department of Defense to become a ready, and in terms of the Constitution, be able to defend the citizens, and also be able to deliver on its external mandate, then I think all of us here as these members were to be blamed for that, not the department. The next one, Chair. I heard the specific talking about members of the department not coming for reskilling. Do they have to come? Or it is an obligation of the department. Because you know that you are supposed to cut down or to rejuvenate the department. And these members must exit. And therefore, they're supposed to be having skills so that they can be able to have an income when they are outside the department. So what are you saying to us? Are you saying they should come for, or you should be obliged as part of your exit strategy so that you see to it that these members go out there and be members of society or be introduced into civil life with a livelihood in that? I think it is the last for now because the director also talked of a number of challenges with HR. So, I think over the period of time in this term of parliament, we have seen that we have a middle management that is sitting there, that up to so far, collectively we have not done anything about. What are we going to do about it, and when are we going to do about it? Because one of the things that the DEFSEC mentioned in terms of litigation was a question of promotion. What does a person, when he or she pensions at a level of a sergeant, going to do with that pension? Because we have been told in the past that if there is no post, there can be no promoting people. And we have been sitting with this challenge. When are we going to deal with it? And how do we intend to deal with it? Thank you, Chair.
Before I go on, honorable members, I'm of the view that
through our interaction with the department in terms of their reports and the oversight, as a committee, we have come to a conclusion that the department is facing very serious challenges. Therefore, they need to be resourced. I think that was the view of the committee. I don't remember if there is anybody who says it resourced means a lot of things, meaning it will also mean up in the budget or something like that. I think that is what that is the concern. Honorable Gabadil.
Thank you, Dad. I've got only one question. The rest is what I want the department to look like. We are serving members here in the committee. The department for me is too shy. Very shy of what they're doing out there. Just to quote the defense officer said, when he opened it up, we take more where we are red and where we are amber and out of the green. We are public representatives at this. We want to hear also the green, because the public is being told of the red and of the green always. And I don't want to represent the public that is limping when it's not supposed to be limping. I want to hear this green, because those are your performances that are positive. We know even if you go to church, those who go to church on Sunday. That's why we don't let the candle put it under the table, put it on top. Everybody see that there is a Department of Defense in our country. Let's not be just like any other department. We are the Department of Defense. What makes us to be there? Even when you're saying I am, it's a matter of you're saying you're waiting for other structures to finalize their duties. It's not you. But I'm going to say to you, tell them to speak up, because we don't want to see this ember that is caused by you waiting on them. Whether it is defense review, go to them, tell them that the committee is worried about their slowness. Just go to the hotel, tell them, it's the service commission that they're not finding representativity. We shouldn't be taking from their problem of, because the country is well represented, what makes them not find the representativity? That's what I want to say, which is the first thing. I want to say, don't be shy about what you're doing. I want to serve in a committee where people are working tall on the job that they've done. You've done a very good job. What I can call a question is on the first presentation. You have been tasked with participating more on the piracy also. But the maritime defense, really, you are given very less. And I don't know whether we manage to fulfill what you were doing before this issue of piracy escalated. Maybe also us as the committee correcting our honorable chairs that we all agree that the budget should be up. And we don't want to see our oceans being undefended. Let me end there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to thank the department for the committee, the report, and the improvement that the department has made so far. It's only a clarity question on page 15 on the defense supply chain integration. The target is 4%, and then on the third quarter it's 1% on terrain, but just when the clarity is solely on
just to follow up on what Honorable Mkabateli said about the green. I want you to indicate, if you can, to how many percentage is the green fee over performance, so that maybe it should be an intervention in the committee not appreciating or not appreciating your effort. Is that?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will be introducing the question, making sure that we have accepted it, and then I will maybe provide guidance question by question that is here cover the area with the details that require. I must say that I am now comfortable having heard the explanation from Honorable Mayor on the issues of how far we can I think that the public wants to know. I want to know how ready we are and where as the defense force ready to serve. How ready are we to serve? So on at that level and high level, I will be asking you, Admiral today, to just give us that kind of high-level information in terms of our readiness, and then when we need to now go deeper into the details and operational areas, I think I agree with the mayor and the honourable that at that level, then we have to go to a closed session. And I also have Colonel Hay Salmon from the Air Force. I think he will talk to the issues of our defense as well as our
hope.
But just to highlight that, first of all, we will have to define what we mean by long-term storage, so that people mustn't feel like when you talk about long-term storage, it means we have really pushed them aside to non-new areas. What do we mean by so many creepers in long-term storage or so many hawks in long-term storage? So let's start dealing with those two areas of questions, and then we'll go to the other areas of questions. First, it will be Admiral Pillay and then Colonel Hensamen.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. In relation to the questions pertaining to the State Department Navy submarines, I'd like to provide the following information. Firstly, that the Norfolk ACS Montecito, which has been discussed in this committee previously, after a fair amount of work that has been done, the Montecito is subject to major overhaul and is in the hands of the original equipment manufacturers in collaboration with the South African Navy, and the intention is that submarine will be ready and operational during the last part of 2014. With regard to the SAS Queen Mathilde, the operational success, the problem has been identified with the batteries, but it is within the capable hands of the repair authority within the South African Navy, and the problem identified has been rectified, and she is operational. With regard to the Charlotte Mathilde, she presently in docking for essential defects, will undergo her deposition trials during the latter part of 2013 and early 2014. In essence, the intention is to advise the committee that the submarine capability is very much intact and the issues in relation to their operational availability is being managed in accordance with the SA Navy's operational program. With regard to the frigates in question, the Adela Amatola is presently deployed in the Mozambican Channel, and she will return during the latter part of March or early April for repairs to her engine. The SAS Fiendcup is currently undergoing a harbour acceptance and sea acceptance trials after the repairs that have been undertaken to her. So two frigates are presently therefore in the process. The Solar's operational Fiendcup is being worked up. SAS Isandwana, her engine in fact is being changed and a fair amount of work which should be finished at the part of April, early May, and with regard to SAS Mendy, that is a long-term repair solution. In essence, therefore, offer for frigates, two, one of them is in the operational area, the other one is being worked up, operational deployment, and the other two being managed in terms of the Navy's maintenance and upkeep program and her operating program.
very much. I think this question is not coming here for the first time, and you've been very consistent in answering it. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, and the information regarding the different medium fighter aircraft in terms of the 12 aircraft being in long-term storage is correct. There is no plan to envisage for the long-term storage of the 24 World Fighter Trainer aircraft.
Thank you very much. I will now go to the commitment to the others. I think I will ask Bani Engelbert and the CFO to just address all the questions that are related to the possible overspend on the capital assets, addressed by assuring Honorable so that no, we are not going overspend again. As you know, 2006-07 cycle, we had a lot of overspend. That we had a lot of overspend, 2006-2008, that took us a long time to recover from that overspend. And I must say that, you know, sometimes you get a rebound. After overspending, we get so scared after being hit by the committee that now we are at risk of underspend. If anything, we try and remain on target. The CFO will go into detail together with Mr. Engelbert on those overspend and underspend, as well as the issues of the level 4 over expenditure and unbudgeted expenditure. We'll answer all of them. The CFO will be addressing on those questions. And we will wait a little bit on the acquisition commitment, or maybe I can deal with the acquisition commitment. As members will remember, we have what called SCAMP, that is our strategic capital asset management plan. That's our major policy for the acquisition of our military equipment. And the that is managed by a different account which we call the SDA, the Special Defense Account. And the reason that this exists as a Special Defense Account is because when you want to acquire a military equipment, most of the time you will have to develop that equipment, meet the requirements of a specific service. If, for instance, right now we're talking about we have acquired the Gripen, the Hawks, the frigates, the submarine, you may remember that it took us 10 years to complete that acquisition process, because development has to be done on each and all of these equipment. Now we are looking towards the next 10 years of acquiring for the strengthening of the army. The army is behind. We talk about the tanks, what tanks? We talk about infantry combat vehicles, what infantry combat vehicles? What's the status? Where are we? These are the issues that we are now focusing on. And we have just approved in the department the acquisition of the infantry combat vehicles in the project that we call Roof Acer. And the last vehicle of the Roof Acer will come out of the factory in the year 2023. So you can see then that as we sit here, I will have to be budgeting how much are we going to be spending in the year 2020, in the year 2023, when the last vehicle of the infant combat vehicle comes out. So then that is what makes this acquisition process budgeting a little bit different from saying, oh, how much have we budgeted for this financial year, how much have we budgeted for. I've already budgeted up to 2023 for our infant combat vehicle. So that's the process that we're following. Am I going to overspend and underspend in any given year? I'd like to assure the committee, not deliberately, but as soon as those vehicles hit the ground in the tunnel factory floor producing, there will be a year where I will be under pressure to revamp, to ramp up the production instead of so that they can produce more in that given year. Then maybe we might find ourselves having to come to the committee to approve the payment of funds from this area
so that when the taxi flow start functioning, can maybe even fast track it and produce the last vehicle for 2023. But this will do in consultation with the committee. But just to assure honorable members that we have no plan of over expenditure come March 31st this year on acquisitions. On salaries, maybe.
Yeah.
What you Can we hope you
thank you, Chairperson. In terms of honourable member, in terms of overspending on the capital asset, as we are doing now, we put the control in place to make sure that all the orders that are issued and also the invoices that we'll receive are in line with our spending pattern. That's the first thing. The only area without the capital nature, it might be as the fact that being on the compensation of employees. But if you look in terms of the capital, on the machinery and equipment, we're only sitting at 72.6%. If you're using a straight line basis, at this time we're supposed to sit at 75%. At this time. It means, even that period for 3 quarters, we do have a role by at that time. And also, looking down to say on the specialized military asset, as we are saying is the specialized military asset, it's based on the cash flow, on each and every beginning of the year. We submit to Treasury the cash flow, how we're going to spend, because looking at the nature of the asset, that's a perfect. And also we submit the other thing on the supply chain side, we submit the procurement plan, of which at the end of the period, we need to make sure that whatever asset that we are purchasing, it will be according to the procurement plan, in order for us to make sure that we are in line with the supply chain management framework. That is where we are. I really see what is the concern of Treasury, that looking at the period, that we only, at the end of December, we're only looking at the 3 months. If we are not using arithmetic here, we are using what is planned for. Because if you look in terms of the arithmetic, it's just to take that budget and divide it by 12, of which in the asset category, it doesn't work like that. It can only work like that on the current assets, which is like goods and services, as well as the compensation of employees. So I can assure the honorable members that each and every week, we are following up on all the orders that have been issued, not only the orders, also on the financial authority. Because before we issue the orders, we need to make sure on the financial authorities that that thing it was budgeted for. Because in order for us to avoid the overspending, the reason for that, I would like to remind the member, the reason to what we want to avoid that, if we remember all the unauthorized expenditure that amount that came from 2007-2008, it was only approved last year. Now, we want to avoid those unauthorized expenditure to keep on appearing to our books in each and every financial year. At those stage when we will allow the department to have an unauthorized expenditure, more efficient on the capital nature. That is where we are. And also the member talked about the maturity level 4. Maturity level is not up to the department to decide. Let's start from there. Treasury assess what maturity level the department is in at that point in time. They raise the concerns and then the department work on those recommendations. And then after that they assess which level this department is operating in. Looking at the expenditure trend of this department, looking of what the explanation that has been given to Treasury is a clear indication that the department is operating at a very healthy stage at the moment in terms of the spending pattern, in terms of the spending pattern. So, we are trying by all means as a department to put all the internal control in place to make sure that whatever is being budgeted for, it is spent accordingly. But I would need also to highlight, to say, if there are actions that is really critical for the department at that stage, which is unforeseen, the department followed the correct processes to apply for the environment in terms of Section 43. To apply for the environment to say, but must not exceed 8% environment. To say, okay, fine, if this is critical, let's reprioritize. If it's not within that program, then we will apply for the environment. And then talk to Treasury as well. Because we got that continuous engagement with Treasury. That's where we are at the moment. But I would like to assure the member that we are really monitoring this expenditure, not only on the level of the CFO. Each and every week, we present the expenditure at a very high level of the organization to make sure that the spending pattern is in line. That's where we are.
The two issues, the one regarding the piracy, we can confirm that the department's budget has been augmented with 585 million per annum for anti-piracy operations starting the 1st of April. That's because added to the budget, but then on the other hand there were a lot of other funds taken away from the budget, but in essence there's 585 million for anti-piracy operations in the defense budget starting the 1st of April. Just to add to what the Secretary indicated, we have identified in the 2018-19 MTEF period a challenge on our special defense account regarding the acquisition of equipment and specifically who faced it. Because we've identified that potential deficit, we are also working on that to make sure that it is adequately covered to prevent any other expenditure on budget. Thanks.
Yeah, but I think you need to put a footnote to that answer when you say we have provided 585.
See what the Treasury did. Was that he told us to cut down on our personnel strength, on our soldiers, by 10,000. In 3 years' time, we must have fired 10,000 soldiers. And then, after that, he went in and took others in the funds, cut down on other funding, especially for the landward forces as well for the Navy, for the military health services. After having cut down by so much, then he said, but for the maritime strategy, you can then put that one up from 200 million to 600 million. And that's where our CFO was very angry with them, saying, you know, once you've cut down, don't come and tell us now how much we should spend here and how much we should spend there. Because when we ask for money for the maritime strategy, and of course this becomes very visible, it's in the media, it's in the cabinet, it's everywhere, we're employed to fight piracy. Then the Treasury said, okay, yes, take the money from there and put it here. So he's robbing people to pay for it, but I think the CFO can talk more about that, which is fine. Overall, the budget has been, the overall defense budget is being, as members are aware, reduced drastically. Then there was the question on the defense supply chain integration in terms of what are we doing as targets. The target, when you say the target, is that, well, first of all, we have a target of getting a policy for the defense industry, which I think with the finalization of the defense review, now it's ready to come out, approved for approval. And then we have the target now to
to reduce non-compliance with the supply chain regulatory framework. As you know, the legal service department, I think when you look at the non-compliance, has been running very high. I don't have figures now, but I think if not mistaken, over the last few years, sometimes even more than 10%. Then we use this standard of auditing, what I would call it, Apple Watch, to say materiality is set at 5%. But we said our target for this financial year is that non-compliance with supply chain regulation must be less than 5%. We put it at 4%. And the reason we put it for giving the clean is that as of now, as members know, we are required to disclose all non-compliance with the supply chain regulatory framework. We are required by law to disclose all irregular expenditure, all fruitless and wasteful expenditure, all unauthorized expenditure, and we do disclose this every quarter to the Treasury. And at this level now, we are at 1%, which is that's why we're putting green as our target reached. The next set of questions we'll be answering will be answered by Dr. Kamete, our Chief of Defense Policy Strategy and Planning. She will be talking on issues of research capabilities. I know a question was asked, where does research fit? I'm the accounting officer. I would say, I wish I knew. Well, all I know is that it fits everywhere. We have research activity on a quality level, that's Dr. Kamete, and on defense policy research. We have research activity in the defense material on defense industry product marketing. We have research activity in technology. Research activity in technology and development, which we are in partnership with the CSIR for various technologies. I think, as the members will know, I mean, some of these technologies that are being researched in defense end up in the commercial services like the internet, like your GPS and so forth. And now we are researching very strongly on better control, improved control of our missiles activity, but also on our ammunition, what we call smart bomb, so that we don't just drop a bomb that sort of explode and destroy collateral damages, but smart bombs going straight to the GPS that we have marked. When the bomb is released up there in the air, it goes straight to the accurate GPS point. And we are working on that within our defense industry. So we have also technology on human resources that we work with the HR for instance, both in terms of post-traumatic syndromes and in terms of behavior of a human being under threat or under threatful or non-threatful environment. We also do research in the health environment. We have had a very strong program that on research on the HIV. Actually, I can safely say that we are the cutting edge, leading edge on our HIV research program. More, I think, one might say, as one member was saying, put a candle up here, more than some of the results that we have had just in the military environment, which is not publishing, it's working together with the National Institute of Health in the United States in a program that we call TDSA program, where we have seen, I think, the longest people on antiretroviral and improvement and various programs that they're in. So we have research activity everywhere. I won't be able to say it's located there or located there, but what we're trying to do is have all of it properly coordinated, and that's what Dr. Kamete will mention in terms of that's what we mean by operational structure of our research capabilities that Dr. Kamete will speak to, but also on the Defense Secretary's strategic direction, on the policies, what are the policies, and so forth that have not been done. So I'll just address that part of policies, especially coming from the Honorable Hassan. If there's any question that we are not answering, we will come back to it. Okay.
Thank you. Through you, Chair. The first, the research capacity, just to indicate that we are working on a structure that will, as the Secretary has indicated, coordinate research in the department. And in order to do that, you then need the people who are going to make input into the process of developing the structure. Those people, that unit, which is also the policy formulation unit, all of capacity, the human capacity has been seconded to the defense review. So that's why we're saying it's on hold until we get that capacity back, because the defense review is priority and should be finalized as soon as possible. And then just to add on risk management, we have a very robust but relatively new structure that is coordinating risk management in the DOD. But we have achieved relatively well. We already have a risk management framework that is aligned to the National Treasury. We assess our risks as required by the risk management framework. We every quarter we do report on how we have mitigated risk. We have a corporate risk register strategy. We have risk registers in centers and divisions, operation risk registers. So we are properly set as far as risk management is concerned. The policies that are under review, the policies, the 10 policies that the member asked about, I will request suggest that we provide a list as well as a short description of what each policy is meant to address in writing, because I don't have a list here, but they range from SG environment to CLOC environment. Thank you. Oh, and just the last one, this was asked about the greens and the reds, and that we have emphasized on the reds. The Defense Secretariat has 38 performance indicators, and out of those 38, only 4 are red, and 5 are amber, and 29 are green. So if I may say so myself, I think we are doing relatively well. And in the Defense Force, there are 32 performance indicators, and out of those, 9 are red and 4 are amber, and 19 are green, which is, again, relatively good performance. Thanks.
Thank you very much, and also just to thank Honorable Member Mkabatedi that we should, once we light the candle, we shouldn't put it under the table, we should put it here. And the next time when I come, I'll make sure that I put that candle here for the green. I think it is true that we, overall, in terms of our performance, we are not where we want to be. We are almost there. And that the most important part of it is that I fully agree with the Honourable Kavadja that we don't usually publicize the achievement. We don't publicize the success. We don't publicize the good work that's done by our women and men in uniform. Even in the media, you hardly hear anything that is good that's happening in the Department of the only time when you hear anything reported on the defense in the media is usually when something negative is happening. Unfortunately, there's nothing much you can do to control that, but I'm very happy that at least that observation has been made for the record. I will then be maybe going to the last set of questions that have come in regarding HR issues. The issue that has been raised on the reskilling program that we have, when we, yes, we are still a defense force in transition, I guess sometimes mostly for continuous improvement, because we want to improve the way we work in the Department of Defense, but we are still coming in out of that integration of various statutory forces and non-statutory forces to make our South African National Defense Force. So the issues of transformation is still very critical at all levels of our commands and council. At various stages, we came up with a program on career progression management. What makes somebody who has been in service for 40 years
still come out of the service being a corporal, being a captain, after having been in service for 40 years. What is the program that we can establish of a career management, that if we have been in the same rank for 5 years, for 10 years, there is something wrong with you? What are we doing as a Department of Defense, as an employer, what are we doing to ensure this career progression? One of the programs that we put in place, I think the Chief of the South African National Defense Force is very passionate about it. He's even published a document internally that he calls a profile of a South African soldier and career management from cradle to grave. When you come out of the defense, when you get to the defense force at age 20, yes, by the time you are 50, you are exiting, we want to see you there. We don't want to see you being there all the time. If you have remained in one post for a long time, then it's time to exit the system. If you are not progressing, what is the exit mechanism that we have? So the exit mechanism will always be there. And that's when we started putting budget for it. Because it was said that if you don't budget for a program, the program does not exist. So we said, okay, this project is a reskilling project, and we looked at our strengths, and we said that we will put so much a year. So anybody who feels like he has not been progressing and now it's time to exit, whether it's through pension or through voluntary exit, there is a budget that he is allocated to, which might be about 13 to 15,000 that you have available for you to reskill yourself in whatever way you want to reskill yourself. But you have to come forward and say, here I am, I'm preparing for, I would like to receive a reskilling so that I can, as part of my career progression, preparing myself for exit. What we are saying is that maybe, I think General Mantwana, we might have to find out why there has not been anybody who has volunteered to come and take up on the program. I think there's only one that I know of. That just happened recently, but up to now, not anybody has come out. And unfortunately, I didn't even know why. I mean, General Mantwana would look at it, that when it comes to the next quarter report, which will be reporting on this issue, we might inform the members of the committee about our findings of that one. This was on the risk, and then on the issues around the middlemen, I think I've addressed that people remain here for 20 to 30 years, not moving up and to a point whereby they end up exiting. But the military structure is a pyramid structure. It doesn't mean that everybody will exit being general or being a colonel. Not everybody could exit the military being a colonel or a general. But there has to be some kind of a plan for career progression of our soldiers. Honorable President, I think I have covered the list of questions that have come out during that round. As Dr. Kamit has indicated, we will provide in writing the list of all the policies that we are working on for this financial year. That is what is going to provide to the chairperson in writing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take the last round. Honorable Zedler, Honorable Daniel.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Honorable Kedia, in the order.
Thank you, President. I think I asked a clarity on 813. I didn't hear the answer on that.
Thank you, sir. I saw on the presentation about the force structure and the force design. If my memory tells me well, it was not part of the mandate of the defense review to deal with the force structure and force design. That is the mandate of the Department of Defense. And I can't understand why it is not
implemented
up to now. Because a number or a lot of issues are depending on that. That will be the first one. Chair, I also saw something that talks to the morale. I always see this indicator in the report, but I never understand what it means. How do you measure or determine the morale of a soldier? If it's progressing or is it a good path or... I'll mention one thing. The barracks. For people to live in such conditions is just unbelievable. It's just not acceptable. Which brings me to my next question. What is the problem for the department to get out of this contract with the Department of Personnel? We have been hearing about it over a period of time now, but there's nothing tangible about it as to where do we go from here. I am not going to go into that, but it's something that needs to be dealt with as urgent as possible. The last content is on the compliance of first levels of external operations and serviceability equipment of the external operation. Now, we've heard what the DevSec talked to, but what I never understand is why do you take these vehicles or
equipment,
this defense material to this mission if you know they will not qualify within the requirements of the UN for their department to be picked. Because it's costing us to take them from here to the next country. And then it takes time, or you have to convince, or whatever the process is that's going to for the department to be picked. Then it's a headache. Why do you get there in the first place if you know that it won't happen? I would like to believe that the department members, the secretariat, and everyone else that is in the department, or the specialists in their field. And therefore, I would really like to see them advising on this issue. Not only agreeing when a command is given. I know that the department is supposed to comply in completely lead. But also it is very important to advise that in some of these issues, certain things are not applicable. And looking at the budget, and looking at the material, and looking at competitiveness of the Department of Defense, that is in question at the moment. We really need to look into that, Chair. Thank you.
Called
you in that order.
Yes,
sorry. Thank you,
Honourable Chair. Yeah. Thank you. Honourable Chair, I just wanted to have an indication from the CFO side, from finance. It's just that what is the projected percentage at the end of financial year? At the moment we have 68.1. What will it be at the end of this month, more or less? Are we looking at the 99%, the 98%, or over the 100%? The other one was, budgets or expenditure is considered unauthorized, and that is part of risk management. And just an answer, how did it slip through? How did it, was it actually passed? If it's reprioritized, it's normally done during the adjustment budget period, which is towards the end of the year, where we reprioritize and we submit to Treasury those recommendations or reconsideration. If it is unforeseen, of course, there will be condonement requested from the committee to consider. The other one I want to raise is the issue of, in the report, we see under Capital Works Plan Projects, there's a zero next to it. And according to the report we received on the budget, the E&E itself, it indicates the Vatikloof base airstrip has been completed at 1.1 billion more or less, which is not an accurate reflection of what's in the report, because if there are projects that are actually complete, it should be reflected in the report, because the E&E report is already out, and it indicates that it is completed at 1.1 billion, which is actually less than the budgeted amount of 1.113 billion, which was allocated. So it's below budget, actually completed. The other one was the issue of border safekeeping. I see it's within the 1111 battalions we're looking at, but we spoke about there has to be more because the borders are not actually fully manned and protected and safeguarded. So if we say we're meeting that target, there were a target set of 15. What is the actual amount, and when do we actually fulfill that amount that we have our full contingency covering the safeguarding of the borders, which at this moment is still very porous, and our fences are broken, and people are crossing. So what is the prediction that we are happy with the 11, and it is actually opening our borders for infiltration and also illegal goods to be transported across our borders? The last one, Honourable Chair, is the one on financial disclosures, which says the SMS. The SMS has completed 95% of the requirements, which means they've signed the necessary documents that indicates that they, there's no conflict of interest or that declaration is available. But I want to raise the issue here, the question posed by Honourable Markey about the anti-corruption and anti-fraud strategy that assists the department and is addressed to the Honourable Minister, prevent and combat corruption and fraud within the department, and whether there are any serious challenges of fraud and corruption pertaining to procurement and supply chain management in the department. If not, how was the conclusion reached and what are the relevant details? The answer given, I want to just accept the last part of it. I'm not going to read the full one. Yes, there are challenges, though the challenges are not that serious. Procurement and supply chain management has been identified as the highest corruption and fraud risk for the department, and mitigating actions are implemented. And it lists there the current challenges, conflict of interest and declaration of financial interest, security clearance vetting backlog of officials in supply chain management, and unethical business conduct by the private sector. Now, those are serious ones, and I know Minister Sisulu has indicated also that from the public sector side that they're going to clamp down with this issue of conflict of interest, and that all public officials will have to sign a declaration of interest, a declaration of conflict of interest. So I think it's a serious issue here, and it mentions here that steps have been taken. Can we have an indication of how that is being dealt with? Because we have dealt with the issue of the supply chain management issues, and we're quite happy with the performance. But with this report and the response by the Minister, we do have a concern.
Thank you, Chair. The three brief follow-ups, two questions and one very brief comment. Just on the South African Air Force and the Gripen program, picking up on the Secretary of Defense's point, I think it would be very helpful if you could briefly outline what exactly long-term storage of an aircraft entails and why it is that these aircraft are in long-term storage, and perhaps what advantages or disadvantages there are of long-term storage. On the SAS Queen Mujaji, I'm relieved to hear that the submarine is, the battery defect has been rectified and that the submarine is operational. I wonder whether you could just briefly tell the committee whether the Board of Inquiry has been completed into the collision with the seabed, and whether and what indeed the main findings and recommendations of that Board of Inquiry were, assuming that it has been completed. Then just on, you mentioned the SAS Mendi, one of the frigates, and your point was that a long-term solution was required. What exactly is the problem with the SAS Mendi, and why is a long-term solution required? Those are my follow-ups, Chair. Briefly, two additional questions. The key question, the Secretary of Defense correctly stated that over the NCF, the next 3 years, the Defense Force appears to now be required to downsize by 10,000 soldiers. How indeed is the Defense Force going to achieve that goal? Is there a plan in place? Also, just to pick up as an aside on a point that the Secretary of Defense made, you mentioned that it was a new phenomenon that ships from Asia were landing individuals on the Eastern Cape. Is this a
I wonder if you could give us some further insights, perhaps, in whether the particularly the Defence Force and particularly the South African Navy may have a plan to combat that phenomenon. Then, those are my two questions. Then a brief comment. The Secretary of Defence said that the Defence Force, when the Defence Force is in the media, it's normally for the wrong reason and the story is negative. I think the Secretary of Defence's analysis is absolutely right. But what concerns me is the Secretary of Defence says that there is, I think, very little that can be done about it. I disagree. The fact of the matter is the Defence Force needs to communicate its success. There must be successes within the Defence Force every week and every month and every year. But it seems to me that there's no plan in place with respect, Secretary, to communicate those successes. So let me make a suggestion. When the SAS Anatolia returns from its patrol period in Mozambique, why does the department not communicate how many sea hours were completed, how many ships or aircraft were intercepted, how many training tasks were completed, etc. In the past, the department, it seems, has relied on a multimedia campaign of billboards, TV adverts, radio adverts. Frankly, that multimedia campaign is barely credible. There are successes every week and every month and every year. The Defence Force must communicate that to the public of South Africa so that they know that they're getting value out from the Defence Force. I really urge the people.
Honourable Chair, thank you. I think we are dealing with a very important organ, the Defence. Now, where the department has made successes, we have to credit and appreciate. Honourable Chair, we are getting to 20 years in government. You know, members have indicated yes, have said to, but say, bring our water, not only the gym, all the areas, the facilities are horrible of defense. Now, here I would like just to ask a question on a particular facility. Defense intelligence facilities accommodation in part is decaying. Now, I would like to know whether at this stage there is any improvement. If not, why? For these people are defending us. We don't exercise our power that we have. Our young men, our men and women will not be happy, and they are not happy within them. So I would like to understand the call about the military intelligence facilities, accommodation in particular, in the past was so very bad. Thank you very much.
Dear Secretariat, I'm going to require for you to be very brief in answering this round of questions.
I will gladly oblige. Can I start with a follow-up question? Please, on the description again of storage, long-term storage, why storage, what impact?
Chairman, this is a very technical answer to a simple question. The South African government bought 26 Griffin aircraft. The 26 Griffin aircraft of which stock will be in long-term storage will be in a lead stock type of storage, meaning that there will always be 26 Griffin aircraft, but only under 14 will be available on a specific day. 12 will be in long-term storage, but it will not necessarily mean it is the same 12 over time. What is important to answer the second part of the question, the Air Force received an internal document to reduce its cost in our combat assistance group, specifically on contracts. There are two main contracts in the combat system group. One for the airframe and one for the engine. Those two contracts are on different companies. It is a cheap method to ensure that two Griffins over time are in long-term storage, not necessarily the same grip. Specifically, it is not cost effective to put any aircraft in long-term storage due to the reduced allocation. It was prudent to have this specific option, to have 12 aircraft in long-term storage, to have at least over time 26 Griffins available for the South African government.
Thank you very much, and then I will ask Admiral just to follow up on this question.
Our members expect that to your question. Perhaps just an announcement, some history in terms of the media in Romania. The South African Navy hosted Navy Week towards the latter part of March and April. It attracts about 11,000 people, predominantly from the Western Cape. It's scheduled to take place in the latter for the first quarter of this year, March, April 2013. All members of the public, including honorable members, are invited to attend. I'm sure it's going to be a success that it normally has been, as indicated in the past. Because the question on Queen Majority, a border inquiry was convened, regrettably, share honorable members, I don't have the details in terms of finding the recommendation, but if the committee so requires it, the exact information can be provided at the request of the committee. With regard to the media, and perhaps I use the term long-term solution loosely, obviously, we talk medium-term strategic framework and the medium-term framework, which is 3 to 5 years. Mending is just for essential defects in terms of a replacement required on her, and that solution, in fact, is in fact being formulated by the Navy and should be in place. I use the word long-term in my own context, but the point is that a solution is being explored after her docking for essential defects, and that might happen sooner than I intended. Thank you.
You should therefore send the committee to
Right.
Chair, just on a point of order, I in fact last year did attend the Navy week, and I spent 2.5 hours queuing and in fact had a very good visit on board one of the submarines. And also at the same time watch the great display of the Hawking craft.
Okay.
Thank you. We need to highlight that more in the media. Enjoy it. Himself. And thank you very much. And then into the ships that are heading in the Eastern Cape, I think that if one is, this is the process of an investigation, I wouldn't put it like something happening every day. It's just that what I highlighted is what to say new trend hasn't happened before. And this is more of illegal immigrants, not pirates. And it looks like the pickup points are around the east coast of, around the Horn of Asia and East Asia. So you'll find Asian, and one doesn't want to be specific about the nationalities, but if you just think of that region, the Horn of Africa and Asia. And and the reason we are mentioning, of course, because it's a source of concern, it's a main worry, which we talk to, again, the functionality of our defense force in terms of patrolling the borders of the country. That's how we raise it. I would ask the CFO, I think, to respond briefly on those questions. I think that were very, very specific, especially for vulnerable yourself, and also around the expenditure, estimates of expenditure around waterproof.
Thank you, honorable member. Let me start in terms of the projection. Where do I see our projections at the end of the financial year? Honorable member, before I come to the executive projection, I would visit if government is not on the cash flow. Because if we are in a poor, I will tell you right now that it is the hardest thing. Because each and every order that will be issued is the account. Because we are in a cash basis system, I'm looking at plus or minus 98%. That's where I'm looking at the situation. Also, the honorable member highlighted a very important point when it comes to EMD. I would like to remind the honorable members, in November last year, the cabinet took the decision to cut the budget of each and every department. That was the first cut, of which it was affecting the baseline. When the first chapter file finalized for E&E, on the 12th of February, the further cut this year, the further cut on the budget, if you look to the entire MTF, the baseline is affected. Now, if the baseline is affected by all these cuts, because the more we cut it, you can't cut on the compensation of employees. That's the first thing. The other part that you can't cut on the transfer and subsidies. Those ones you can't cut. Where you can look at is on two. It's good on services. If you come well, you can say, let me sacrifice on the capital nature. That is only way one might link you. Now, as you might think, that the decline on the baseline is affecting those two. That's the reality. We, as the Secretary of Defense, highlighted very clearly that we have seen the on the first card, there is a letter that went through to the DG of Treasury, so that we can arrange the meeting between the FEDERS and the chief, as well as the DG of National Treasury, to talk about this. What implications does it have to us? Like the members right now, they are asking us quite a number of questions about Marines and everything. Those one was a requirement that we put as this department, but everything was turned down. But what it was said, no, cut to your compensation of employees and then to fund this, to reprioritize. Without knowing, I need to put it to context this one. Defense is the labor intensive. It's not run by the machine. It needs defense. If you are saying about cut on the compensation of employees, how the operation of defense, how the core will be met, cut. Now, I needed to see to do the opportunity to cost which one is better. Okay. That is where we are at the moment. And also the member asked about the unbudgeted item. At this point in time, as I'm sitting, I don't know which one is unbudgeted item because nothing that it came to me. The reason why I'm saying that, because each and every budgeted item, in order to apply the Section 43 of the PSMA, which is the requirement, it needs to be approved.
firstly it needs to be recommended by the CFO, and then it goes to the accounting officer, which in this case is a CFO, to approve, and also further to notify the minister, because as an executive authority, in order to comply fully with Section 43, also the executive authority need to know about those violations. So, at the moment, none of those came to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think just to follow up on that question, to answer the question on the anti-corruption plans and what we have, I think I can mention maybe two major tools that I see in our hands for that we're implementing right now. Number one is the internal audit capacity building. As I've indicated, we are maybe one of the few departments that have appointed an accounting, I mean, internal audit at the level of a DDG. And that capacity is now being downscaled, or not downscaled, but implemented into all the facilities, into the faraway facilities. And also, the major tool that I see in terms of fighting corruption, especially in the environment of procurement, is this issue of security clearance, the vetting. I know that I will just say vetting and then leave it at that, but if I were to explain to you, what we mean by that is that, starting with myself as an accounting officer, I have a security clearance for 3 years. That is from 2011, 2014 expires. I have to make sure that I am current. Come 2014, I need to be vetted again for security clearance. What has been happening in the past is that once we have a security clearance, you know, it lasts forever. So we have started now listing each and everyone whose expiration, and after that, the chief of the procurement officer himself. His vetting now is being upgraded. And what is involved in vetting is not just say, oh, you've been fine, you've been a good boy, or and so forth. But, yeah, no. We look at not just the criminal record, but we look into your bank accounts. All your bank accounts, how's the money been flowing? Are you living above your means? If you're earning so much here and you own such a house and you own such a, and what's your financial expenditure? We looked into that deeply. And then, of course, after that, we also look into all the information that's available to us in terms of where are you a director, where are you having shares, where are you active. So that it becomes part of our vetting processes. And fortunately, we do have defense intelligence in-house. We have a defense intelligence that does this. We don't have to go to PricewaterhouseCoopers or to go to some of foreign investigation agents to do that. We can do all of that in-house. And then once we have done that, we have to cascade that to each and every officer, person, employee involved in procurement. And then after that, of course, our policies in terms of training, we never used to pay attention to this, but we then realized that it is very important to start training, as I said, our procurement centers have now been cascaded into all into decentralized everywhere, to start training the people there in that environment, because sometimes it comes up as corruption because it's registered here as the policies were not followed. If you say procurement policies were not followed in procuring these products and services, it appears as if somebody was corrupt when actually somebody just didn't have the capacity. Understand that once you have advertised, you don't then call that person who's bidding and say, hey, yeah, we have received your bidding process, can we meet for coffee and tea? It might just innocently done, say, no, but your what you call is poor. People just releasing information innocently, not realizing that it is against the policy to do that, because you get at the disadvantage other bidders that are in. So all that is what we are engaged on as part of our anti-corruption plan. But yes, the high risk area is the procurement, supply chain management. And also, as far as the financial disclosures of SMS, we're at 95%, we want to get to 100%. We are doing everything. And we have even threatened sometimes to say we're going to hold salaries for those who have not submitted their financial disclosures. But we're told by our lawyers that you can't do that without this and that. So we haven't done it, although we were definitely considering doing that. But in some instances, the senior measures that are talking about are deployed outside, either as defense, other chairs, or as in various deployments as commanders outside the country. That does not exclude them from submitting their disclosures. The Honourable Chairperson, on the level of readiness on that question, I didn't understand it exactly. Maybe the reason I thought we have answered it, maybe we can just carry it on the question, Dr.
Thank you, Chairman. It's on defense by chain integration. The level there, the target is 4% and the pay quota is 1%. And the level, the overall progress indicator is green. That's what target I wanted to do.
So I was trying to explain that we want the non-compliance with our supply chain regulations. We want it to be as low as possible. The auditors, in terms of the various auditing standards, is that it is material if your non-compliance is 5% or more. So we started there and say our target is that our non-compliance with the supply chain regulations must be 4%. That's our target, because we were coming from 10 to sometimes 11, 12 non-compliance. We said we want to bring it down this year to 4%, but we have succeeded. We have overachieved because it's now 1%. So I'm waiting for bonus
I'm
wrapping up. We don't have time.
That's not answered, Honourable Chair.
We don't have time. We are wrapping up that idea. We don't have time. We don't have time, sir. Honourable Chair. We're going to wrap up. Are you done?
Quickly. Yeah. I think on the first question, of course, is I fully agree. It's not in a defense review. It must be internal to the DOD, and the Subcommittee of Defense Force is dealing with that. It's work in progress, force structure, force design, work in progress. We will see. I don't think you're going to report completion by the end of the financial year. It might be overall to the next financial year. And then when it comes to the barrack conditions, public works has been a problem. It's still a problem up to today. We wanted to take over that function of public works. First of all, we wanted to build our own internal capacity. We formed a defense formation. Our general was our defense attaché in the United States. We have brought him back. He's very bright and capable and active young man. He's now the general in charge of our defense works formation in the only started 1st of January of this year, to really now set it up to a point where we can take over the work. The reason it has not been moved is one, on the public works itself, wanted to clean their house so that when they move it, they move it with a clean house, which we agree. And secondly, on our side, while we're building up internal capacity, it's going to come in stages. Stage number one is that we will just take over the maintenance of public works. Stage number two is that we'll take over the old works. That is the whole estate of the Department of Defense, which will include the construction and maintenance of buildings. I can talk to the members of the committee that during this financial year, we have completed the auditing of all our immovable properties. Now, as the Department of Defense, we can give you a registry of all the land and properties owned by the Defense Force, which has never happened before. We did that with the consultation working together with the CSIR. They did an excellent work, and even the Department of Public Works says that we have done what they haven't been able to do in terms of the registering of all the properties, immovable properties that they own, and it's been audited by the Auditor General, and have been given unqualified auditors at that level. Why are we taking scrapped vehicles to overseas, to deployment outside the country? I don't know. When we deploy them, they are all working and serviceable in good condition, but the conditions where they are operating, whether it's in Sudan, whether it's in DRC, or in South African Republic, they are, every 18 months, they need to be serviced. They have major parts that need to, whether it's aircraft or ground vehicle, and at any given point in time, it's a challenge. It just comes with the process. That is not to say that we take them here not serviceable. We take them serviceable, they get there, they operate, and after a while they need to be serviced, then we need the capacity, we need the funds, we have to come up with the money ourselves to go and fix them over there. And do we advise the commander-in-chief when we're getting these deployments in terms of our capabilities and our mission readiness? Yes, we do. Just before Christmas, we had to come back from our holidays to have a tripartite meeting where it was the DG, Presidency DG, Treasury DG, Defense, all met to look at where we are deploying now, what kind of capabilities, how we're going to be able to address these issues. And that meeting, I think, was the first time that we addressed it at that high level. And the Treasury promised that we'll take this into account when it comes to the budget vote. I think that's why, I think, when you look at the budget vote, I must say that was useful. We didn't get what we asked for, but at least we did get something in terms of, even if we didn't get the increase that we wanted, at least we did not get a major peak that they envisaged before we had that meeting. So I would say that the meeting was useless. I would say it was very useful in terms of setting us further cuts, as it were. Yes, in terms of water deployment, you talk of 11 was our target. The reason we put 11 is because we have to target it according to the budget that we have. How many battalions do we need to make sure that our water are relatively well protected? We need 21. Am I going to put 21 next year? No. I'm not going to put 21 as my target because I don't have a budget for 21. I'll put 11, maybe I'll put 15, because if I put 21 and I don't achieve 21, I'm going to be hammered for not achieving my target. I really cut my cloth according to the size of the cloth that is given to us. I agree. We do need to communicate our successes. Actually, not just in the anti-piracy and others. If you look at our deployment in Kruger National Park, along the border with Mozambique, fighting anti-rhino poaching, we are the major force in the anti-rhino poaching fight that we're having. Are we registering success? Maybe not as much success as it is, but there is a lot of success that can register there. Some success we can talk about, limited as it might be, along the border with Zimbabwe in terms of the number of people that do, the number of illegal crossings that we have stopped through our activities, and as indicated, the number of interceptions that we have done even in the anti-piracy. All of wherever we are, I think as we're deployed as a defense force, we have tangible impacts and successes that we can have taken into heart the advice and, actually we need a communication plan. We do need a communication plan. So I hope our team is recording that. So when I go back home, we must really say we were hammered on this one. We do need a communication plan. The downside is of soldiers, 10,000, how are we going to do it? I don't know how we're going to do it. The only plan I have right now is that in terms of natural attrition, about 3,000 soldiers leave the defense force naturally every year through death, resignation, and retirement. But they need to be replaced. You can't say, okay, let them all go, and then after that you'll be down, you'll get your numbers. This number playing is frustrating us, because if 3,000 have left, we must get 3,000 in, because otherwise, if we don't put them another 2,000 in, then your capability is just about 3,000 less than it was last year. You are not going to be able to achieve some of the things you want to achieve. So, is that a plan? I don't want to call it a plan. I'm just supporting the situation where it is. I will have to negotiate each time. The only plan I have is the negotiation with the Treasury that people who are leaving the Defense Force through natural attrition must be replaced. That's all I can do in terms of that. But maybe, of course, skilling, reskilling, and others is one of the indicators. General Ramazan, can you just quickly talk about the moral indicators? How do you know that your soldiers are happy?
No, I think the answer to this question is the number of people that are talking
about. Thank you, Chairperson. There are a number of issues that we use to measure the morale of the soldiers. One of them is management and leadership, where we look at management from top to the immediate supervisor. Issues such as career management, training, personal administration, availability of quality equipment, communication, that means the flow of information from top down as well as from bottom up, and satisfaction with the medical and psychological services by the South African National Defence Force, motivation and the attitude of the soldiers towards work, and combat readiness of our soldiers. These are the issues that we look at to determine the morale of the soldiers. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, but I think we've covered all the areas that you've given to us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Defense Secretariat, for bringing my meeting back. You had taken over. So the defense was running itself, so that's what we wanted, but you must account to us. Now, look, there's no ambiguity as to what is the constitutional mandate of the defense. That the primary object is, amongst others, to defend and protect the Republic and its people. Therefore, it goes on to say it should not be a matter of race. It is irrespective of color, irrespective of gender, and it's irrespective of ideological affiliation. Now, what do you expect the committee to do when you present here? When you present your dream, it's not only upon you to say, we have improved, we have done very good. Also upon the committee to appreciate, to demonstrate appreciation that we feel that the department is living up to our expectations. Now, when you present your ember, we'll monitor it. And when you come here, we'll ask you, when is the ember becoming green? Then when you present your red, we'll also interview. I understand, I realize that in most of the activities there, you cannot continue with them because of the Defense Review Committee. Then I want to assure you that we have prioritized a briefing by that committee. That is our intervention. When you ask about the submarines that are grounded or demobilized, Honorable Meunier, I reckon you'd go on to say, look, I'll also donate a submarine if you don't have enough. Because this is in your interest. That is, that should be the, I think that is, that should be the approach that our committee should take. But then we have done several oversight activities on the department. The report is going to be presented, we are going to consider the report as a committee, and it's going to be presented for consideration in Parliament. But now, what we expect from you is those recommendations should be followed. You must look at the recommendation in your budget, because you always complain about resources, and we agree that you should be resourced. Then in your strategic plans, action plans, you need to also to prioritize those findings of the committee, so that you should work hand in glove with the committee. So you must interview, you must really interview. I think that is the approach that we'll take as a committee. Thank you very much, the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Kuluva, and your delegation. And you are released. You are dealing with the other business that does not need your presence. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we have a comment on that, but for the first term, fine. I mean, we've got a 3D program, and we don't have much
time. Yeah, we'll continue.
How much?
Oh, hello, Mandy, are you okay?
No, I think I'm behaving with you.
Let's get the submarine.
Yeah, but they are grounded.
No, they're doing the exercise now also. Is it today or so that they're doing at Gallipoli?
I'm not sure.
I think it was 7, 8 minutes on... Yes.
Well, thank you very much for taking care of it.